Excited to welcome Jared Maccabee to the Basketball Podcast. Coach Maccabee in 2022 launched Kansas Select in Wichita, a youth program that exploded from 1 to 13 teams, a youth program that exploded from 1 to 13 teams by 2025 and is slated for nearly 20 next summer. In November 2025, he added a nonprofit arm to Kansas Select, eliminating financial barriers so every Kansas kid can chase the game the right way. Maccabee played two seasons at NAIA Bethel College before he spent his junior and senior years as a student assistant. A master's degree at Ottawa University dovetailed with a season as an assistant coach, giving him hands-on experience in recruiting, practice design, and the day-to-day grind of building a college program. He then returned to Bethel as a men's assistant coach and assistant athletic director. Coaches, today we have a unique podcast. One of the coaches that follows basketball immersion and is part of our community reached out to be able to ask a number of questions about coaching youth basketball. So today we're going to have Coach Maccabee on the podcast to be able to ask some questions. And I know already from the questions he wants to ask that this is going to add value for all of us as coaches. Hey coach, a brief time out from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute sponsored by Hoopsalytics. Do you really know which plays, sets, and actions are working for your team? On offense, how valuable are paint touches and post entries? On defense, do you get more stops playing man or zone? Like high-level college and pro teams, you can use an analytics system like Hoopsalytics to get data-driven answers to help guide your in-game strategy and practice emphasis. With Hoopsalytics, you can track any action or set and see the resulting points per possession. Plus the video link stats, you can view your successes and fails and see if it's a play design or execution issue. And you can easily build organized film sessions from these video clips. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball. today to learn more and start analyzing your game for free. Jared, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
How's it going?
Man, pretty cool to have this conversation. When you reach out to me, and you can imagine, Jared, like a lot of people reach out. I'm so grateful for that. So many great questions, so many inquisitive people in the world that are curious about better ways. And when you reach out to me, I hit you back right away and said, hey, listen, maybe we should have this one not offline. We should have this online.
Yeah.
So maybe let's start. Tell us a little bit about your basketball program, the Kansas Select.
Yeah, this is our fourth year. We're based out of Wichita, Kansas. We're really big for us is like player development. We know a lot of youth basketball, whatever you want to call it, is maybe not about the right things right now. So we're trying to do things differently and trying to learn the best ways that we can develop kids in our area. So that's where listen to a lot of podcasts for sure here and learning those things. And we're up to 17 teams this summer, and we're trying to be not about the extra things, all like the highlight videos. We want to be about getting kids better. And that's the motivation for me hitting up you is how can we be the best at what we do? And we're not perfect and we want to become better. We want to learn from people that know a lot more than us for sure. And that's us for sure there.
It's great timing. I've been in this space now with my daughters for 4 or 5 years. Youth basketball space, the AU space, the development space, particularly around them and all the different people that have surrounded them. So we're going to be able to add value for all coaches here. But let's start with your first question.
Yeah. So I think one of the biggest things that I take away from all the really high level coaches you have, I think of Crutchfield, I think of McCollum. They don't really have set like rules. They more have like kind of what makes sense to them. And then they let their players figure it out. When you talk about solution-based stuff. So I guess simple, what does that look like for you in a practice with a normal set of 10 to 12 year olds?
So the solution-based approach or the figure it out-based approach is a foundation of certainly what we share. And I think let's start with an example first. Instead of telling a player where to stand, ask a question and say, where is the space? It's just a simple difference, right? It's like, yeah. I can literally say, hey, go stand in the corner, or I can ask them and say, hey, where's more space? And yeah, they can find space. And they start to connect these ideas around them figuring it out and them solving the problem based on, again, we're triggering it a little bit, whether it's the alignment of the players on the court or it's literally the question itself, but that solution-based coaching is a part of it. And you referenced some of the high-level coaches. And I think by and large, a lot of it is more and more. It's, okay, we're going to put you in this situation, and then we're going to trust you to figure it out. And that's why we want players in their development to connect to player development to team development, in the sense that it's a scanning game, right? Yeah. It's like, it's a visual game. What are you seeing? Why are you seeing that and not seeing this? And then how can we help them understand through principles of play or different things around that about how to play conceptually and just, again, increase basketball IQ. So yeah. This solution-based coaching is literally that. It's like, what can we put them in a practice that's going to help them figure out these different things, this guided discovery, and then obviously checking for understanding in some ways with these questions. It's like, what did you see? And rather than saying, hey, you should not have passed there or you should have passed there, it's more, what did you see? So that they can arrive at a kind of in that guided way.
Yeah. So you're saying, like, let's say we're a kid's driving the ball to the rim and some guy helps off, say, away ball side corner. And you're saying, like, okay, we're going to stop you here. We're going to recreate it. Maybe if you're teaching it to them and say, what did you see? Why did you go try to score that? Is that kind of what you're saying there a little bit?
So I just got back from doing a practice takeover, and I did one with this age group, but I also did one with a high school. And I would say both ages, the number one takeaway from coaches is not me going in and saying, okay, listen, this is how you defend the down screen or anything like that. It's literally seeing this way of coaching, which is they're playing basketball and we're going to say hold, which is a stop. Recreate means go back to the situation. And then from there, we're using these questions that we just gave you examples of to be able to get them to see. And instead of saying, hey, we just say, recreate the situation. Okay, this player, go back to that. And everyone go back to where your spots were and say, tell me, what do you see? Okay, what might be another possibility? And again, we try not to talk in rights or wrongs, because I think that becomes very definitive. And we know that from fixed mindset and these different things. Like, yeah, we tell them to do this, they're going to do this.
Yeah.
And we know the game doesn't always just have one solution. It has multiple possibilities and multiple solutions. And to hold space for them to be able to say, hey, listen, maybe this is better. And it's like, it might not be my answer, but I'm not playing. It doesn't have to be my answer.
Yeah.
So that type of thing. So I agree, like the recreate it. And then I want to just add the one last part of this, which is the most important part, is follow that feedback with action. I think coaches give so much great feedback, but then all of a sudden, like, they're on to the next thing and the player's on to the next thing. I know it's a little artificial, but we would play from that exact situation again. So we'd recreate, we'd have the player stand there or take a step back or two, drive it again. And now they must use one of those solutions.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, that's good. I think, like, for us, I think me too, I have always a habit of, I want to make myself sound smarter maybe, but really, like, at the end of the day, that's not like what makes them better for sure. I think that is, and I think that's what we think coaching is sometimes too, for sure.
Sorry, let's talk about that. It's hard to overcome that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, as a new coach, a young coach, it's still so much lecture, because when we talk, we do sound smart. Parents, administrators, players less, but people go, oh, this person knows what they're doing. And a certain amount of that is important. But how can you do that differently? And I just want to share this, because one thing I do that I think is really important, and I did it at both these sessions I referenced, is I'm constantly going back to have mini conversations, whether it's the parents are watching or there's other coaches there or with individual players. I'm trying to have mini conversations constantly to be able to share more depth of what or why. But the players themselves, when they're playing, they don't need the depth. They need to play basketball to get better at basketball.
Yeah. I think, like, for me, I know you said it first, like, especially as a young coach, like, we had parents in my gym last night and I'm like worried about, like, all right, we're playing 3-on-3. I haven't really said anything in a while. We're doing it okay, but does that mean is it now time to do it just because I haven't said anything? And I guess that's my next question, is like, how do you balance between that? Like, what makes it, because obviously kids, like, especially 10-year-olds, they're going to mess up all the time. And they're 10. That's what they do. So, like, how do you balance between when you step in and say something and when you just let them figure it out?
I think there's generally this concept of bandwidth feedback, which basically means that gradually over time, the amount of feedback is reduced. And that makes sense. That early in learning, when you're teaching things, teaching concepts, let's say that spacing concept, then you're stopping it a lot more, but over time, you're stopping it less. The reason I share that is I think that's important to let parents and players know. It's, look, we're playing basketball. Like, we're playing 5-on-5 or playing 3-on-3, whatever the small sided game is you're playing. And I remind them of that all the time. Listen, we're playing basketball, but I am stopping it a little too much right now. Why? because this concept, this principle is going to help you play better basketball. To me, I think that's the most important thing. Don't be worried about stopping it as much as being sure that you're selling the reason you're stopping it.
Okay.
The reason you're stopping it is because I'm trying to help you be better. And if you figure this out, we don't have to stop it as much. So yes, there's a balance. You don't want to stop it too much. But again, the trade-off is, look, we're playing basketball for the whole hour and a half. That's different than they get 10 minutes at the end of practice and then you're stopping it when they're playing basketball. That's annoying. But if they know they're playing basketball the whole time, you don't have that issue as much. But look, you're always going to have that in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
I'm stopping it too much or I'm not stopping it enough.
Yeah. That's actually interesting you say that about the last 10 minutes too, because I've heard you talk about no, like maybe all 5-on-5 practice. I've heard you, this was a couple of years ago. I think I listened to a podcast about it. And like, when you do all 5-on-5 stuff, or you've talked about is more constraints too, I guess you're talking about. When you go into a practice, is it kind of like a feel thing? You're like, man, last tournament, this team gave us some problems, and then you figure it out from there? Or do you have a set 5 minutes we are working on? This team gave us some ball screen problems. We need to work on guarding ball screens. And I guess, like, how do you manage playing 5-on-5 a lot, but also making sure you're teaching?
So the easy answer is it depends on how many players are in the gym. And I think that's really the thing. So if you generally talk about one of your youth teams, do you have multiple teams practicing together on the same court, or are they individual teams practicing?
Yeah. So we usually try to have 2 teams of 8 practice together.
So there's 16 on the court.
Yep.
Yeah. So this is ultimately the challenge for all youth coaches. And we're working with the NBA and working with EYBL teams. Sometimes they have 8 in the gym. So they don't even have a full team to be able to play. So it always depends on that. So let's qualify that first. Secondly, look, I'm always going to try and coach the whole. I don't want to break down the game if I don't have to. Progressions actually, to me, slow down learning. If I'm going to use a whole bunch of progressions, it's actually going to take away from transfer, which is ultimately they're playing a game of 5-on-5. So we're going to try and do it at a 5-on-5. If they're struggling with it, then we task simplify. Back to your other point, which is a great one. You just identified it. Every drill you do in practice is a game solution, right? So if they're struggling with ball screen coverage or they're struggling on finding this decision, then create a version of basketball that works on that. And that's essentially what a constraint is in some sense, is we're going to start from this task constraint. Okay. Chris has the ball, player on defense is on my hip, and now I'm going to start from a drive where I'm going to draw help. And now we're working on that situation we talked about earlier. And we can do that at a 5-on-5 as a start to 5-on-5. And then we can play multiple trips to the floor, so they get to play multiple trips, or we can stay in the half court and get a whole bunch of reps. It all depends. You've got to determine that as a coach based on feel, but I do really encourage you as little as possible to reduce the number of players at first, because then they identify the task complexity of the situation.
Right.
After that, we reduce it. Now, in your situation with 16 players, look, we would do a lot of our 4-on-4 fast break, because we can teach a lot of stuff. And the fifth player essentially is just someone we're trying to put in a spacing spot anyways. We get so hung up sometimes on the fifth player, but the fifth player is like dunker spot, setting a ball screen, running a get. Like, they're in some way, they're not just 5 out. And I've talked about that on the podcast before as well. So
yeah,
try and start with the part only if you need it. And of course, at the levels you're talking about, you'll need parts.
So yeah,
create a game that works on the parts.
Okay, that makes sense. That's super helpful. I think my next question maybe is kind of the same thing as far as 5-on-5 too. I think it's, and for us at least, it's important that we still try to develop kids' strengths. I think there, we've all seen the kids that are like 6'2 and probably like 7th or 8th grade and they never grow again. So I guess, what is your like thought process behind like developing kids, their strengths, while also still having some foresight for like where they could be? And like, how do we not pigeonhole them so they're not the same player as a 6'2 post player in high school? You know what I'm saying? So how do you develop the strength with also like keeping in mind what they could be?
We see it online all the time. You can't go on Instagram or TikTok without there being, the best 8th grader in the world.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, sure, they're the best 8th grader in the world, but that doesn't guarantee they're the best 16-year-old in the world. And that's the problem with all that stuff, is like development is nonlinear. So first of all, understanding that no matter what you do, it takes time to develop. And some players develop dribble first, some players develop this first, other players develop this first, and some develop physically first. And that's just a reality of it. What the goal is ultimately is to train every single player on your team like they're a point guard. Look, after so much experience in the youth game, I will say the number one determinant of development is who handles the ball. Think about how many more decisions and how many more reps they get.
Yep.
Which comes back to this next piece, which is they're all basketball players. So I literally will start sometimes when I go into places and I'll say, what position are you? And a kid will say, oh, I'm a this or that and that. I'm like, okay, here's my goal. When someone asks you what position you are, you say, I'm a basketball player. That's ultimately what you want to be, a basketball player. And it's beautiful because the game is showing us that now. I think this is less of an issue because if they watch basketball or their parents watch basketball, they know that 7-footer is shooting threes and driving off the dribble. So it's a little bit easier. So again, if we go all the way down, here's the biggest problem at the bottom of the funnel is like winning. If you're a youth coach that cares about winning, then forget about all this. Put your tallest player in the post.
Yep.
Let your best player handle the ball and go win. None of this conversation matters to you.
Yep.
No, and if you don't care about winning, and if you can convince your parents not to care about winning, then it's about development. And every game, a new player handles the ball. Every game, everyone plays every spot, blah, 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 because we want them to develop. And they'll also have more fun. I've talked about it many times, but one of the limitations to the enjoyment of the game and retention in the game is being labeled as a certain position. Think about baseball. Oh, at 9, you're told you're the catcher. Wait a minute. I got to be the catcher for the rest of my life? I'm not playing baseball anymore.
Yeah.
Forget about it. That's not fun to me. Like, why am I the catcher? So like, basketball, thankfully, is not that defined, but think about it as coaches. If you don't care about winning, then rotate players so they all develop in every spot. And again, by nature, what we talked about at the beginning as a game-based practice coach, they're all going to play spots and they're all going to develop and they're all going to get tons of reps playing basketball.
Yep. I think that what you said, man, that is such a, I know in our area, that is such a huge problem for us is like some kids 5'9" as a fourth grader, and they're going to be at the block. They're all they're going to get is offensive rebounds. And then they never get any better. And my thing is like, why would you not? Like, what's the risk of doing that? He grows to be 6'7" and he can has guard skills. That's what I think, at least.
Coach's ego, parents' egos.
Yeah,
they're driving this because they care about winning.
Yep.
And I get it. Like, winning is important. I'm not saying winning is not important. We want to compete to win. We want to build winning habits. We want to build losing habits too, in the sense that we want to understand what it's like to lose and what it's like to win. And both of those are part of, by nature, being competitive. Being pissed off when you lose is part of being competitive. So we want to win, we want to lose, but we don't want to win all the time, because if we win all the time, then we're not really learning and we're not really developing. So that balance is hard as well. So finding appropriate competition, optimal kind of competition, is a really big part of that.
Yep. I'm learning a lot here. That's for sure. What, as far as like you talked about like competition, that brings me to another question I had too, is how do you balance between winning and losing? And I know we always like to play kids up. If they're good enough, like, we'll play them a grade older. We like to say we're not trophy chasing. So I guess, is that something that's like good or bad? I think that's something I'm up in the air about. Is that a good thing to do? And how do you balance between development and actually winning too?
So I've never understood this, but again, this is ego driven, right? It's play up, but also play your own age, play both. If you're running a program like you're running, which is awesome, you've got all the levels covered. Hey, this weekend you play with them, but this next weekend, and explain it to parents. It's not just about winning. It's about developing. It's about being able to try things. And the really good player playing against or playing with better players or playing against better players doesn't necessarily get to explore as much as we want them to sometimes. So we can literally play them at younger ages. And again, I've referenced this before, but there's two teams in LA that are doing this approach. And the one team really does a great job balancing this, that they'll play a tournament where they'll play up and they'll play a tournament where they'll play their age group and they'll play different. But when they're playing their age group and they're going to win, sometimes we know they're going to win. They play with essentially constraints that they say, hey, listen, when we're over half, we're going to play no dribble sometimes, or we're going to do this. Okay. They'll say to my daughter, hey, you're bringing up the ball, and she's not traditionally the point guard. It's perfect because it's opportunities to explore. So it's all blended and all that stuff. And we've said it, you've heard me say it before, but it's just post a picture with your team in front of the banner after every tournament, like you won. Nobody knows different, and move on.
True. That's a heck of an idea. That's a good marketing strategy, I think, there.
It's a great marketing strategy. Don't say whether you won or lost. It does not matter. Just post the picture in front of the banner, and everyone will interpret it however they want. But a lot of people just assume you won.
Yeah, that's genius. That's actually genius. Yeah, I think that's super helpful for us, because I always try to find a balance between that, and I never really feel like I have, and that's good.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
I think for me, I guess moving on a little bit here is like for my questions too. I think one of the most influential things I ever learned from you, I did my whole master's research project on this, was like contextual interference and like block drills, small sided games. I think I did it over shooting. There were sixth graders at the time, the team I have now. I guess what my question is like, what are some like ways and like, how do you explain to coaches and my coaches, and what's the most important thing as far as like making sure that we understand that like block drills don't do really anything for us besides, I don't know. I feel like you get what I'm trying to say a little bit, but
block drills are confidence building, right? In a sense, yeah. Some people would say early in learning, you do the block skills to get the really understanding representation of the technique, for example. We're talking more about technique than skill. But for me, I mean, I'm not anti-technique. I'm not anti-on-air. I'm not anti-doing block things, but I'm just saying don't start with them. And that's the problem, is that we come into a practice and we're going to start by teaching them pivoting on air. Then we're going to teach them passing on air. Then we're going to teach them this. And then we're going to put them in the game. And you know what? They're going to struggle anyways in the game. Well, how about if we just start with the game? They're going to struggle just as much as if we did all those drills first, because yeah, there's no connection to it. Now, if we play the game first and then we do some, okay, now we've got to do two minutes of just this, okay, pass, back, forth, to understand passing and how your body moves and stuff like that. Fine, do it, but do it as like a connection to the game, not as something separate as a silo. And we can't silo the game. We can't do this in space and then bring it together. Like, they got to be together, because the game obviously represents that. And that's really contextual interference, really the best thing that kind of came out of that. And I'd love to hear your thoughts a little bit too, but like, on the verge of forgetting is when we're actually remembering and learning, right? It's like, yeah, we're mixing these different things together, like shooting, dribbling, passing versus a defender, for example. And like, we're mixing all these things instead of doing them in isolation. And okay, now we're going to come back to now let's do the pivoting in space. Okay, now let's go back to the game and now come back to the pivoting. Like, it's that moment of moving back and forth where they have to retrieve something in their brain because we've interfered with it and now come back into it. And shooting is such an easy thing, right? It's like stand there in a spot and shoot. Well, I feel pretty good about myself. Then I move somewhere else. I don't shoot as well. So it's interfere with their remembering of the distance of the shot, for example, so that they actually do now become adaptable instead of repeatable.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think, I guess there's probably a balance to that too. Like, how do you balance between, like, obviously form is a big deal. I know Dave Love, I've learned a lot about how to do that with him for sure. I've learned it from your podcast, was the first person I listened to with him. And then I got into him, obviously. But there, how do you balance between, obviously, a kid, like when they're younger, they're going to shoot from here and they're going to throw it up there and they're going to chest pass it. So how do you balance between that at a younger age and not being too variable where it's like they can't learn the technical skill, I guess?
Yeah, shooting is such a hard one, because shooting is, no matter what, is a late maturation skill. And I got to put it together for people, but like, literally my oldest daughter, like from the start of shooting, the only thing I worried about with her, if coaches can visualize this, is lifting the ball within her body with no shoulder turn and no hip turn. So generating force from within your body. She could do that, but initially it was very two-handed. And that's fine, because what's the goal? The goal is to get it to the basket and put it in the basket. How you do that, we're so obsessed with how they do that. Now, I'm not saying there's not a technique that helps you do that more efficiently and effectively. I think that's proven. But how we get there does not happen right away, because she didn't have the strength to be able to do it properly right away. But over time, with cues through constraints, she's developed more consistency with getting the hand under the ball. And then obviously that importance with Dave Love talks about the importance of that elbow extension. I call it extending the ladder, getting it, obviously the release point up high, different things like that. That's nonlinear. Like, again, to teach an 8 to 12 year old how to shoot with proper technique, to be honest, is a waste of time. It's like, focus on just force generation. How does it feel? How does it feel? How can you get the ball to the rim without turning your shoulders, without turning your hips? To me, that's a foundational part of it, because they're all going to cheat to a certain extent to get the ball there.
Sure. Yeah,
they're all going to cheat, and that's fine. But we don't want them to cheat in a way that makes it really hard to change later.
Okay. So you're saying that, like, I think of in my head, I'm thinking of a couple like third or fourth graders we have. So you're saying it's okay, like, as long as they're not like compensating for power, is what you're saying. It doesn't matter how they get it there, as long as they're not overcompensating for power.
Yeah, I find the hip turn and the shoulder turn really hard to change.
Okay.
But if they're just like a little two-handed, that's fine. A few skill acquisition professors I've talked to about this, and they're just like, they think we complicate it really so much. It's like, what's the goal? The goal is to get the ball to the basket and put it in the basket. Whether it's a bank shot or a swish, does not matter for the score. It's still worth 2 or 3 points.
Yeah, for sure.
Or one if it's a free throw. So I think for younger kids, again, it's like we get a little too hung up. And no matter what you do, form shots and stuff like that, sure, they can do that on their own. I'm not saying don't do that. But that's not going to transfer yet, because it's just not their physical maturation to be able to do it. And I would say, again, my oldest daughter now, probably 13, 14, is when stuff is actually transferring in there. But my youngest, who's 12, just turning 13, man, she's still, if you watched her form, I think many coaches would say, oh, that's like improper technique. But meanwhile, like, she's shooting like deep, no problem. And she makes a ton of shots, because what's the main piece, I think, for all your shooters? Is confidence shooting.
Yeah, for sure.
So to me, we don't focus on the right thing, which is like the mindset of shooting is more important at that age than the actual technique of shooting. Because how many kids do you coach later that literally won't shoot an open shot?
Yeah. I have a kid. Yeah. His middle school coach does not let him like shoot threes. And I'm like, why? Like, why? Like, he's, and yeah, man, you're going to get me fired up about that now.
Yeah, but it's such an old narrative, right? I get it. Oh, kids shoot threes, it's ruining the game. I don't know. If you don't shoot threes, you can't play the game anymore. And it's at all levels, to be honest. And the two teams that I work with here in LA, literally they win because they shoot threes, because they create space to be able to drive and kick and shoot threes.
Yep.
So they're scoring a layup or a three. They're not following analytics pure. Like, they shoot pull-ups and stuff like that. But it's like literally they're trying to get those gold and silver medals, and a gold medal leads to a silver medal. So if you're not shooting, it's really hard to do that. And it's really hard to play against. What do you play against most of the time? In youth basketball anyways, zone.
Yep.
So it's solution-based coaching. It's okay, we can't administer the problem, so let's solve the problem. We got to be able to attack closeouts, and we got to be able to shoot the ball. There you go.
Yep. I know you had an article not too long ago about that, about how we can freak out about kids playing zone or teams playing zone, but what are we teaching our kids if we don't say, hey, things happen, you've got to figure it out?
Zone and man are the same at that age.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it's coaches that cause the paralysis for the players.
Yeah.
Thinking we got to do something different. You know what we got to do at that age, no matter what? And that's why we don't run any kind of set plays or stuff. It's literally, we got to find space.
Yeah.
That's it. You can cut to space. You can drive to space. You can obviously move the ball to space, but we got to find space. It's a game of seeking and finding space. Zone or man, doesn't matter.
I think that what you just said, I think was very like, I think you maybe just changed what I think about shooting all and just what you just said there. Because I think you go back to like ego stuff where it's like, you don't want someone to come watch your team play and they have like bad form. And that's all like selfish ego stuff. And I think for me, I still have that and I try not to. I think that's another example. We talked about winning earlier. I think that might be the same thing. I think, would you agree with that? I guess.
I definitely agree with that. Again, it's, don't get me wrong, coaches, it is the hardest thing to overcome because we're all competitive. And Jared, you played college basketball, you've coached college basketball, and you've been at the youth level. And you can't separate yourself from the competitiveness. That's really the hardest part. But it's okay. It's okay to want to win. It's okay to want to compete. But there's got to be perspective to that, in the sense that, okay, remind yourself, if you just got crushed or you just lost, remind yourself, okay, all that matters is how good they're going to be at 16. I can't tell you how many times I say that about my coaching, the way I'm interacting with kids or something like that. And just reminding myself, hey, you're not good at this yet. But you work at this, you're going to be good at this. And that's fine, because everything's a process to be able to get better.
For sure. Yeah, I think back to that too, like, we did a lot of the like the drills, things where you put your hands up, put your hands down, and that's when you shoot. I got to tell you that they were 12 years old at the time. We were not a great three-point shooting team. We were okay, but then we did that. We started doing that in March. And by the end of the summer, we weren't the biggest team ever. we ended up playing in like our local, it's a national tournament. I don't know if everything's a national tournament nowadays, but it's a big tournament for us. We treat it as like, that's the big one we want to go after. And that literally changed the game. We played a team from Arkansas that was had 2 6'2" kids as sixth graders, and we should have won. But yeah, let's go back to the competitive
Your
part.
Competitiveness coming out.
Yeah. So I like that was, man, that was such a groundbreaking thing. And I think I applied it to so many other things too, where you're like, how do you teach decisions all the time? Yeah. I think that was a maybe
let's just the BDT hands up, hands down thing, or the, it's really just an understanding of whether you have space or no space.
Yep.
It's very simple, but to do it for a player connects, we know the science behind it, perception, action, coupling, like you perceive, you decide before you execute a technique. So if you're just doing technique based stuff, then you remove the two most important things that happened before it. And that's where I say to coaches, the decision is more important than the technique, right? And at 10 to 12, if you can get players understanding the decision of when to shoot, when to pass, when to drive on offense in particular, and then it's a game of opposites on defense, clearly, so the opposite, then you're going to improve them. But they might not have the technique yet to be able to complete the plays and finish the plays, right?
Yep.
But understand, just share a quick thing, but I sit beside a parent sometimes when I watch my youngest daughter play, and their daughter literally has gone through a growth spurt where I actually identified this girl and she came to our team because I could tell that she had an incredible understanding of the game. She just had a great feel, a great understanding, but she didn't have technique yet, really. But it was because she was going through these growth phases, and literally she just got coordinated, and she might go through another growth phase, but she just got coordinated for a little bit. And I said to the parents, I said, like, I've been telling you, just relax. She's doing all the right things. It's going to come together. She was missing every layup. She was just, it was just like, but she was making the right decision every time to shoot the layup. And that's what we kept highlighting, saying, you know what? I get it. We want her to score too. She's missing right now. But, and now she started making layups and stuff. It's, whoa, look out. She's going to be a player.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. I think you alluded to it a second ago too, and it made me think of this too. Sorry, I'm not asking any of my questions here. It just,
all good. We're going where it's going. That's what we do, Jared.
Yeah. But yeah, you talked about a little bit about shot selection. Like, how do you coach shot selection where in a way that still allows players to grow? Because you talked about gold medal, silver medal, that kind of stuff too. But you still want players, you know, at a college level, like this guy taking a shot is different than this guy taking a shot. But at the youth level, how do you like allow for that shot selection, but also growing their kids' game too?
And again, here's, and I think you know this, but look, when we, there are so many incredible coaches at all levels of basketball. There's really good coaching nowadays, and the intelligence of coaches is just off the charts. I can talk to a youth coach about points per possession. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are really educated and really smart. But one of the things that is an incredible disconnect is we still idolize the college coach. We still idolize and want to learn from these type of coaches who are brilliant coaches, but their problem is not our problem. Sure. And our problem is not their problem. And when you reference these different things, it's like literally those situations about shot selection are being dictated too much by what's happening at the highest level. Sure. Whereas at the youngest level, literally an open shot is a good shot. Now, an open shot in range and rhythm. And that's why we use the different type of medal situation. We basically say any contested shot at the rim is a gold medal. Any open shot is a silver medal. So the goal on a possession is not to run offense. The goal on the possession is to be able to get an open shot, silver medal, or a gold medal shot at the rim. And then we try and say that all the time to players and to frame it for them. Listen, if you've got an open shot, shoot the shot. Because again, where is that kid going to get motivated to want to work on their shot if we tell them they're not allowed to shoot their shot? Even if they can't make it yet, I can go to them after a game and say, hey, you took three really good shots. Now you got to go work on your shot so you make those shots.
Yeah.
Because that's the right decision. And if they're making the right decision, hopefully they're inspired to go work on their shot. And coaches are always like, now I just have kids jacking bad shots. I get that all the time from people. And I'm like, no, I never face those situations.
Yeah.
Because if they understand open versus not open, and here's where you connect it for them, dear. You tell them, listen, I am doing this for you as a player. I'm doing this for our team. So you make more shots. I'm not doing it to restrict your game. I'm doing it to help your game. And I think that's the framing that's come from. If you listen to Nate Oates talk about shot selection, he's not telling guys not to shoot pull-ups. He never has to go, hey, don't shoot pull-ups. He's just saying, hey, listen, I want you to score more. So if you shoot a contested pull-up or a step back three contested, you're not going to make it as much as if you shoot an open shot.
Yeah.
So you can connect that for players.
Yeah. I think Ben McCollum said that too. I know you asked him, like, do you teach that? And he's like, but we just want to say, we feel like this three over here is probably more open than what you're shooting right here. That's good. That's a good way to frame it. I think that's something that I for sure battle to is you go back to the ego where it's like, you want your team to play well. You want your team to take good shots. I think I have a problem with caring too much of what people think and not like trusting that, you know, what I've learned from you and what I've learned from everybody else is that's what we want to do and still learning those things there.
It's hard because everyone's judging you, right? That's what you feel as a coach is everyone's judging you. If your team doesn't do something right, then it's a reflection of you. And it's really hard. There's no real answer to that other than, again, you have to trust the process. You have to trust that if they're playing a lot of basketball in practice, they're going to get better. Like I've never seen a kid not get better by playing basketball in practice.
Sure.
But you think about doing these kind of sterile perfection drills, like the three-man weaves, the 3-on-0 passing, or this Argentina passing and all this stuff. It's like, it looks good, but how did that help them actually play the game better? And to me, it's like, that's foundationally what we're missing at the youngest levels is development of basketball IQ through them playing more basketball. And intuitively, you're a little younger, but intuitively people, my generation for sure, who played a lot of pickup, we know you got better because you got better playing pickup.
Yeah.
That type of thing. Just trust it. Trust it.
Okay. That's good. I think this, as you were talking here too, about teach getting kids to play, I think kids, like, that's what they want to do anyways, play also too. And I think for us, and I want to hear, I actually really curious about this too, is we try to do some transition stuff where we're constantly in transition. And I think that is the best way to teach decisions. And I talked about this, I think you've talked about this too, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts on, we do build up transition, like 2-on-1 stuff. Is that a good way to teach kids how to make reads and get good finishing at the rim and stuff like that too?
I have a full masterclass. I mean, you're a basketball immersion member, but a full masterclass on youth coaching, which is about 86 minutes long. And the theme throughout that is the whole time. First of all, I think it was like literally something like 50 seconds into the practice, they were playing basketball. And the second part is the whole time they're playing full court transition. Because to be honest, it's a full court game. It's like, how do you connect all this together? Is you got to play full court. Now you can play like half court to full court. You can play three trips. It's not just up and down scrimmaging, but playing full court is number one, fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Number two, engaging. So we're not going to have any behavior problems because what are they playing? It's playing basketball. Yeah. And number three, it gives you so many situations to help connect kids with. If you're coaching the youngest levels, like you're talking about, the 10 to 12 year olds, or even going into kind of 8 to 14, that whole age group, like how many situations do we assume they've experienced and they've never experienced it?
True. Yeah, for sure.
They have to be taught. And again, we do assume, and I mean, with my daughters, I assumed sometimes too much that they knew what this team behavior was, or they knew what this situation was, different things like that. And it's like, they literally have to be explained. So when you're playing basketball in practice, all these situations come up organically, and it's part of your job to educate them about this. Jump balls, they happen all the time at that level. Like, how can we avoid jump balls? Like, how can we win jump balls? Like, how can we, different things like that, for example, are always there. Play the game full court, and these situations will come up that happen in the game. And then in the game, you can always connect things back to practice as well, Jared, which is, hey, do you guys remember? This is the exact situation that happened in practice. You know, that helps players all the time connect it and move it from short-term memory to long-term memory or memory consolidation. Because, okay, now I've experienced it here. I've experienced it here. I get it.
Makes sense. So you're like, I would even say, I think people like pressing and stuff like that too, where they're like trying to play in transition all the time. Are you like a fan of that or not? I guess would be my question too.
We're not going to stop it. It's like zone. Like if people are going to press. Now, what I would say for your team's benefit, and the one team here locally did this for a whole year, is basically in some way tactically periodize the schedule for your team. Okay. This 2 week period or this month period, we're going to play only zone. And we're going to play against zone. And then the next month, we're going to play only pressing. Pressing versus, and we're going to get better versus. And then the next one, we're going to have no pressing and no zone. We're going to play man half court. You're going to lose because you know the best way to win in youth basketball. Isolate your best player, play your tallest player at the rim. We already referenced that. Play zone, press. You're going to win.
Equal.
Those are the things that kind of cause problems. So we know the things that cause problems. So work on those things. But if you only do those things, what do you get good at?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
those things.
Yeah,
and that doesn't help development. So you got to think about that way. We don't run any set plays at those ages, really, except going into the eighth grade year for this one team. They've been together essentially since sixth grade. The eighth grade year next year, they're going to start running some set plays.
Okay.
But up until then, it's all structure out of spacing spots and structure out of a little bit of triggers, which we call duets and trios, and playing duet and trio type action. So you can call a set play and you can run a set play, but they're not set plays. It's literally, hey, listen, let's run a duet with Presley and Susie right now. And they know what to do because we know what a duet is.
Yeah, I think that's, we go back to, we were talking about earlier, I think that like sets, I think we always try to, and I do this too, and I try to stop myself. And I think a lot of my coaches do this too, where they're like, I want to run the perfect set that's going to be our team. It's going to make our offense look great. But like, I think basketball is so messy that is how you teach the game and how they become better is like not doing those things too, for sure. And I think I do it too. I know I've done it so many times where I'm like, I'm going to run this set for this player. It's going to be perfect.
Yeah. And it can be, and it can lead to success, but that's not development. The goal of offense is obviously to score. So how can you score in the most efficient, effective way possible? Like the best possession is no pass score, right?
Yeah.
Second best is one pass score. And we get caught up on sets and stuff. It's, oh, we got to run the set to score. Then they're running the set to score, right? Instead of taking advantage of advantage. And that's why advantage is the second principle play. It's like literally basketball decisions supersede basketball plays. So even if we run a play, so we don't want to run the play. What do we want to do? And I keep reminding players this. We're not trying to run the play. What are we trying to do? Score.
Yeah. Yep.
The play is just providing a structure to be able to create potentially an advantage to score. But listen, if the team's not covering something and you have an advantage, shoot, drive, go score. Go score mentality is such a big part of youth basketball.
For sure. Yeah. I think that's like, I like the thinking, like you think four passes, this set there, and then they slow down and they run it. And then that like looks good, whatever. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it does. I think especially like, where you talk, I think you made a great point earlier about the college stuff. Like, I know that you heard me say it too. Like, every one of my favorite podcasts from you were all college coaches. And I like have a hard time balancing that stuff too.
No, but again, they're great to learn from. Because again, you like, what have you talked about with Ben McCollum when you referenced it or Crutchfield? Is like the style of play, the way they phrase things, the way they talk about things. But it's not, very rarely on our podcast are we like talking about a set play.
Yeah.
Like I post set plays and I'm part of the problem on Twitter, because no matter what I do on Instagram or Twitter, when I post a set play, it gets thousands of more likes than me talking about the most important thing in youth basketball, whatever that may be. You know what I'm saying? That's just the reality of it. And I'm running a business, so that's why I'm doing it. But at the end of the day, I'd much rather post excerpts from this and get thousands of likes because people are resonating with it or disagreeing with it, which would be amazing too.
Yeah.
100%. I wish there was more disagreement, because then we could like highlight to people, say, actually, this is why we're doing it. This is why we're saying three man weave has no value. And people would argue it. And no matter what, you're not going to convince them. But at the end of the day, it's like, at least we can lay out the evidence behind it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I guess I'll get you a big question here. I think what we were talking about too, I guess, what do you think is like the biggest problem, I guess, with like American youth basketball, like right now? What is, you had to wave a magic wand and say, fix this right here, you're going to fix a lot. What would it be?
Man, first of all, like, there's no problems with youth basketball. People are crazy. What are you talking about? You guys dominate every age group internationally. You produce the most number of WNBA, NBA players. Like, I think we think about it that way. Now, are there things that can be better? Yes.
Okay. So
let's focus on that, because America is the best basketball playing country in the world, and it's not even close.
Okay.
Not even close. There's great coaches other places in the world. There's great players everywhere in the world, but there's nowhere near the depth of talent. And I just watched some LA high school girls basketball, some of the highest level of basketball that I've ever seen at that age group. And it's incredible, the quality of the players on these teams. Anyways, solutions. Certainly we want shot clocks, right? Yeah. We want a cohesive set of rules. Like, why every weekend do we as parents and players have to figure out what the rules are at this tournament?
True.
Like, literally, I'm like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand that. We know the problem. Nobody really administers basketball. Nobody's in charge of basketball in America. Other countries in the world, the federation runs basketball from the top down, the officials, everything. That doesn't happen here. And I get why. But at the end of the day, it's really the tournament organizers at the youth level that control basketball. Sure. They control the rules. They control the format. They control who's plays who, all this different stuff. And they have incredible power because we're beholden to go to this tournament. And I would say one of the biggest solutions, if you truly want to develop your team, is to skip the tournament model and go to more what high school coaches have done for years, which is find three teams and play against them on a Saturday and play a real type of version of basketball. Because I'm thinking about it. My daughter last weekend, seventh grader, played four games in a tournament. And let's say she started all four games. Oh, great. She still only probably played, I don't know, like less than 10 minutes a game. Like run time, balance team, winning games, sure. But they're not actually playing much basketball on some of these weekends.
Yeah.
And that's where I share on this master class is this model of playing 4-on-4 fast break. It's if you just did an hour of 4-on-4 fast break, you found another team and you found a coach that's open to this style and you get in the gym and you play against another team in 4-on-4 fast break, you're getting more decisions, more reps, more improvement for those players than anything you'd ever do in a tournament weekend. And I'm not saying don't go play the tournaments. I'm saying play less of the tournaments and more of the development. And that's where we go from there. And that's what people reference a lot is the game to practice ratio in America versus Europe.
Yeah, for sure.
But they have to do it. They have to do it because they need a way to compensate for the fact that they don't have the competition every weekend.
That makes sense.
It's funny, Jared, you reference, okay, Wichita, and you're going to, I don't know, where to play games. And it's ideally, you don't have to leave your area within an hour radius of your area to go tournaments. Like it's crazy at the youth level when go do it for an experience. But if you're in Philadelphia and you're going every weekend to Miami or going to Chicago or stuff like that at this age group, I'm like, why? Like in Philadelphia, you're going to find 30 teams that are as good or can compete and just play basketball. And that's what I'm trying to say is like, there's models that can be different and somebody has to be brave enough to do it. But I've got some teams doing it for sure. And I find that they're developing much more because they're getting more game touches, playing basketball differently than a game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, I think the only reason I've always said this too, the only reason why we like travel is with our 17U group. And that's only because they might be interested in playing college basketball.
At the oldest level, you're absolutely right.
Yes, 100%. But yeah, I've heard, man, there's some kids, they were third grade and from Wichita, Dallas is about 6 hours away from us. They were going to Dallas. They were going to South Carolina as 9-year-olds. And they also had people like betting on the games too. So that's also probably a whole other problem.
Let's not talk about that. But no, I get it. Like go once to Dallas or somewhere. And it's an experience for your kids. It's an experience for your, that's part of sport. Those experiences are part of sport. So I'm not saying don't go, but man, if you're traveling as much as some of these youth teams travel, I'm just like, why?
Yeah.
Like why? Like literally in our area, like we don't have to leave LA. We'll get as good a game here as we'll get anywhere we go.
Then, yeah, you talked about too, like, even if you're like way better than everybody else, then you talked about the constraint stuff where you're like, all right, we're not going to, you have to score on a cut to the rim, this possession or this half. You got to score on an, you got to cut, do something different that constrains you to make you better at something else. Maybe you're not as good at too. So there's always like a way to get better in anything you do, as long as you're like playing 5-on-5.
And I'll say, this is a lot of work, but we're there with the two programs here locally that the parents and the players know that they get better in practice. And they also love practice because what do they do when they get to come to practice?
Yeah.
Get to play basketball.
Yep.
So they know that the tournaments are the test, but they're not the development. The development is the practice. And I think that's the problem. I think a lot of parents particularly think the games are a reflection, are development, right? But they're a reflection of the practice more than they are anything.
100%.
And so for us, it's, are they transferring the same things that we're doing in practice to the game? And that's where I'm proud of these teams. Like they're doing it. If you came to one of their practices, it would look just like how they play in the game. And that to me is the most important part of this.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess if you were like running, if you're going to, man, we're going to do something differently. The traditional is two practices a week. And then you go play on a Saturday. We play 8 to 10, maybe eight tournaments, maybe from spring to August. So I guess like for you, for that program and for, as an example, so you would say like almost like maybe less tournaments, but then you're practicing more. And then while you're practicing, you're doing like your transition stuff you talked about. And that's all you're doing the entire time is just doing that. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes. But I'm also saying, like, why are we like, do the parents love spending $15, $20, $25 to go to a tournament? Are you enjoying paying for parking to go to a tournament? Get three teams in your area, get them together on a Saturday, get a gym. Everyone chips in for the gym. and the officials, and everyone plays everyone, and your day's done. It's the best thing ever, but also you're controlling the games. So you're not beholden to the officials of the tournament organizers that are essentially saying, we're going to play 20 minutes run time. And then officials are going to call free throws because they know that the clock keeps running on free throws. So they have to run less. Like to me, again, here's another thing I'd change about youth basketball. I know I'm going down a rabbit hole here, but
okay,
one free throw only.
Yes.
What are we doing?
Say that. Yes.
What are we doing? Like it's run time. And now we're shooting two free throws, like one free throw. They're not getting better shooting free throws in a game. Let's get more basketball decisions, more basketball reps. And that's where obviously shot clocks and different things like that are definitely the solution. And I've said it so many times, but people that are resisting shot clocks, have you ever asked the kids? I know that's foundationally not something that a lot of people do. They think about other people, but have you ever thought about the population you're serving? Because there's not one kid in the world that doesn't want to play more basketball, not less basketball.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I know there's, I know all the, I know just coaches wise, like, I think that's like another way that they can like boost, I don't know, ego maybe, as we talked about too. And I think also like, I know like coaches, not saying this is wrong or right, but like what my understanding when I was a player is that there were times we didn't scrimmage or play 5-on-5 till week two. Cause we're like, we want to be perfect in what we're doing. And like, I don't think basketball is perfect at all. That is, it's random. It's weird. It, like sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't. Kids do different things, and teaching, I think you believe this too. And something I've learned from you is like teaching them how to be random and how to learn in the randomness, I think is the best way to learn, I think.
Yeah, applies to your life too, right? Like how many situations in your life? I mean, it's not surprising, but I parent the way I coach. It's like there's constraints, but by and large, it's figure it out.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to do your work. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but I'm here to guide you if you need it and ask a question that helps you go somewhere if you need it. But at the end of the day, if I'm doing the work for them, then they're not going to get better. And that's what I think a lot of coaching is. It's like telling them exactly what to do is doing the work for them. And then what happens if they can't do it in that moment? They have no solution.
Yeah.
I mean, it's problem solving, sports problem solving, life's problem solving, putting them in those situations as much as possible. It's scary. Look, it's scary. Like the coaches that are transitioning to these things, it's really scary. Cause as you said, like it's, oh my God, it's a reflection. Oh, it looks awful. Oh my gosh. Like we don't look good and all that, but man, the beauty's coming. Trust me. The beauty's coming. Keep playing basketball.
For sure. I think I'm going to try doing what you talked about. Try to get some. Could you almost make a program where you're like, all right, we're going to play four tournaments and all we're going to do is practice. And could you like really, would people like follow that, I guess? Cause at the end of the day, obviously it's business for me too, my program too, but I don't care about the business side of it. I want to be the best at what we're doing. So can that be like something where it becomes like a big thing where we're selling that as a big deal?
Yes. Okay. First of all, let me suggest a few things for that. Number one is you can't do it right away because you got to show proof of concept. So this year, 8 tournaments, next year, 7 or 6, and gradually reduce it. But the proof of concept will be there. So parents now will keep spreading it down saying, hey, listen, we're getting better. Are they really concerned about winning the tournament? Or are they concerned about their daughter getting better or their son getting better so that they're having a better basketball experience? Right. And that's it. So gradually reduce it over time, and then you'll be there. Maybe the first part when you get the team together, that first semester or part of your season, it's like we're playing 4 tournaments and the next part we're playing 3 and we're going to add these other things. So it's like, we're not taking away opportunities. We're actually adding opportunities in some way for them to get better, but it's really hard for parents to get beyond this FOMO of not playing tournaments.
Yeah, for sure.
So you got to gradually reduce that. The second thing you said, if I may, you're a young person, but this applies to all of us in coaching, especially in basketball coaching. You should want to make money. You need to make money. You need to bring value to yourself, and then you bring more value to others.
Okay.
Like the biggest way to impact your players in your program is to create a viable business that rewards you. And this is the American way, isn't it?
Yeah.
But in coaching, we're always like, oh, we've got to sacrifice, or we've got to this, or I'll do it for free. Man, look at some other sports. Look at golf, look at tennis, look at some other sports. They're never sacrificing. Volleyball, at least in California, like they're not sacrificing.
Here too. It is ginormous now.
Yeah. And they're making money. And making money is a good thing because you're providing a service that people want, and it helps you provide the service in the way that you want to do it. Think about this. Kansas Select makes more money. You're going to put more money back into the program. 100%. We know that. I mean, it's a nonprofit arm to it too. So you can just do more things. So to find ways and to connect with parents that can help you monetize things in a really positive way, not from making more money off your parents. I'm not saying that, but like finding ways to be able to create more opportunities. And maybe it is donations. Like that's the easiest way. No question. Yeah. But like you need to make a living doing this.
Right.
Because if you're making a living doing this, you're going to do a better job at it.
For sure.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think that's the problem in America. For some reason, we undervalue teachers and coaches. I'll just stay in that range, in that area, and say, why are we undervaluing the people that spend the most time with our kids? You want better people when they're 30, 40, 50? We need to invest more in the people that are spending the most time with our kids. And coaches are a part of that.
Sure.
If I could just say that to everyone, it's like, we need to start making more money for coaches, to be honest, at the youth level. And I've said this at the EYBL structure on down, but you want to run the best EYBL program, you want to run the best Kansas Select program, then your coaches at the grassroots level should be the ones that are getting paid the most so that they are the best coaches doing it, that are developing players and laying the foundation for the future of your program. But everyone wants to coach under 17, and I get that.
Yeah.
But man, that's why we should pay the ones at the younger level the most.
For sure. I think that's, I know I'm going to get on a tangent here too, but
please.
It's like the fit, like I always think like that's the worst, like age is like from like the culture behind it is like fifth grade to like eighth grade. Cause they're like good enough for people to care, but they're not like skilled enough to have the good coaches quite yet. So that's when you get like where you talked about, I got talked about like the betting on games and stuff like that. And man, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I definitely have a passion for this stuff. And I think it's good to know that like too, and frame it as that way. And like having confidence in what you're doing too. Cause you obviously have built your stuff up and you've helped so many coaches with what you're doing and we've helped us too.
Jared, I'll say this. If the IP that I put into the world was in law, was in medicine, like I'd be a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
But I'm not, I'm in coaching. And it's just, again, I'm not saying it for my benefit, but I'm saying it for young people who are just starting this off. It's like being able to monetize is a good thing. So monetize, because it'll support what you're doing more than anything. And I think it's incredible. And we got to quit thinking about the ways that we're going to take away from coaches and more ways we're going to add to coaches. And
makes sense.
That's it. That's it. Because you're going to do a better job.
Yeah. Yep.
Look, Jared, thank you so much. When you reached out, I didn't know what this was going to be. Obviously, we've never met officially. We certainly were aligned in spirit and in energy for what is possible. And that's what's beautiful about this. And you are representative, and I want to thank you. You're representative of so many people in the community that we've created that are just constantly seeking a better way. It's not right or wrong. It's just a better way. And who's it a better way for? It's a better way for the kids. So your question stimulated me. Your passion stimulated me, and you are an avatar for so many coaches out there that are like you. So I really encourage coaches, please comment on this episode. Please share, please reach out. Let's keep spreading this, because to be honest, the group that needs to hear this the most is not coaches. It's parents. Sure. Parents will drive change more than any coach will drive change at the youth level. And the change is not that hard, really, to be honest. It's just, what is it? Play more basketball. Play more basketball, less about winning, more about development, and play more basketball. And I really appreciate you, and I appreciate any coach. And any coach, you want to learn more about this, again, and look, I am running a business. I need your support. I need you to connect with this information deeper. Basketball immersion has meant a lot to you. So yep. I hope other coaches will find that. And you can just go watch this. I guarantee the full value of basketball immersion will come through in this one masterclass on youth coaching. And we hit on a lot of topics here, but maybe just talk about that quickly, your experience with basketball immersion.
Yeah. So for me, like I started, I think the first podcast I listened to for you, I was probably 22, and that was 3 or 4 years ago. And so it has seriously changed my entire way of thinking about coaching. It is, I think the first podcast I ever listened to was about you and Ben McCollum. That was, I think 2022 or three maybe, and it has changed everything. I did my whole master's thing on it, man. It has been a game-changing thing for me, and what you have done with all of this stuff has made my life better. Hopefully it's made my players better. At the end of the day, that's what matters the most, is my players. And yeah, it has been dang near life-changing for my coaching career, for sure. And how I think about basketball, for sure there.
I appreciate you and I appreciate everyone. And again, this added value, please comment and please share it. And let's continue the conversations, but go Kansas Select.
Appreciate it.